We used to get loud, hit our own town. I used to take you home, now I'm sitting here alone, trying to figure out what to do now. I could head out on the dance floor, find a pretty girl and drink some more. I could call all my friends, tell them that I'm free again. I could stay out all night long, listen to my favorite song. But it sounds like nothing if you ain't got someone there screaming and along. No, it don't mean a damn thing what I do if I ain't got you.
You just heard a snippet of the new single Ain't Got You by country artist Wes Mack, the first single off the upcoming third studio album. With over 13 million streams, 20 combined CCMA and BCCMA award nominations, and a brand new album, a third studio album that he has just completed, Wes Mack returns with his powerful single Ain't Got You. Mack's soaring and gritty vocals shine, highlighting his mastery in his craft as both a singer and writer on the track as his first single as a solo songwriter. In the last year, Mack co-wrote multiple songs with Tyler Joe Miller's massive debut album, including the radio and streaming hit Fighting. He also placed 8 tracks on film and TV projects, as well as acting in the new Paramount Plus series Guilty Party, playing opposite to megastar Kate Beckinsale. Mack is set to appear on the new Netflix premiering this spring. Here to talk about the new single, his upcoming album, and his film and TV projects, and there's a lot of them, is accomplished singer-songwriter, actor, and director, Wesley McGinnis. Stage name, Wes Mack. Hi, Wes.
Hey, Kim. How's it going?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing really good.
It's been a long time since I've talked to you, since the red carpet.
Yeah,
it's been,
oh my gosh,
I know, it's been a while.
I feel like it's been a time vortex the last couple of years. I feel like every second conversation I have begins with like, oh, it's been a really long time. I'm like, man, we jump cut 2 years.
That's right.
It's like my birthday's March 15th, and so basically pandemic kind of started on my birthday a couple of years ago.
Oh, that
and all
sucks.
Of a sudden I just felt like poof, and then I had 2 more birthdays and I was like, whoa.
I know, time, right. It just flies by, but you've been so busy in this time.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
been it so productive sort of, for you.
Yeah, it's weird because sometimes it doesn't feel like it because it's insular a lot of the time, especially during this when it's a lot of studio work or filming work that's like little burst and then you're kind of back to, you know, like during COVID more like, you know, back to just like sort of these repeated Groundhog Day kind of days. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can wake up after an entire year has gone by and like, I did do a bunch of that stuff there, but like, it doesn't feel like it happened because you're still kind of doing the same thing. Like I made this, I think a pretty reasonable discovery in 2020 where it was like about how I think human memory is very, very event-based and less mm-hmm. time-based. Like if you go on a trip, and you do something different every single day for 30 days, it feels like a lot of time was logged. Whereas if you just like go and live the same day 30 times in a row, even if you're having a pretty nice time, I feel like you won't really create a lot of memories in it. Mm-hmm. So I think when you look back at it, you're like, oh, that kind of went by in a flash. And I feel like that was sort of the case with a lot of 2020 and part of the chunks of 2021 and stuff as well, it just didn't feel like time was passing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's being able to be present in the moment, especially with a career like yours.
Yeah.
On both sides, like, you know, with everything that you got that you're juggling, but just remembering to be present, because without that, you know, when you're looking 20 years from now, you want to be able to remember those special moments, and it's really hard to do, and totally. Just to remember all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really wise. I feel like I need more people always to be reminding me of that. That was something my dad said that to me the day before I left on the Shania tour years ago. He said, like, hey, like, this is going to be crazy for you, but he's like, make sure that once a night, like when you're on that stage, take a little mental picture. He's like, you're going to have that with you when you're an old man one day, and you're going to be able to remember that. And I really, 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 it was like big focus thing for me was every night, like, somewhere in the set, just like stop, take a breath, let that memory memory like set into you kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm really grateful I did, because I have like more than any other spots in the show, I have those, like I have a series of them where it's like what was happening at that exact time. And it's definitely, it's tricky in this business because I find there's so much of the sort of here today, gone tomorrow, where it's like if you don't have something immediately going on, you immediately or you rapidly dismiss things that you did even a month ago because mm-hmm. they're not happening today. And I find, so you almost get to the point where, I know I'm guilty of this, and all my friends are, where it's like, even stuff that's going well in the moment, you're thinking about a week from now, because mm-hmm. you're trying to keep the ship going, you know, and trying to keep, like, working away at it. And so, you can indeed miss a lot of the, like, a lot of the stuff you end up working for. So I think it's, I appreciate you saying that. I need to think about that often.
Well, it's just remembering all the accomplishments, you know, that you have really, it's been since what, 2013, you know, when you, when you had your debut and just hitting the ground running, because you won an award that year, and it was just going from there. It's just been nonstop, full tilt, because music was your first love. And I don't know if a lot of people know that in the fan base.
I appreciate you knowing that. Yeah. There's a lot of folks, because I was more successful arguably for a bit as an actor first. So I think mm-hmm. people will point at that as, that I transferred, but it's like, oh, I just wasn't, you know, I have many years of music prior to 2013 where it was like, you know, playing bars and making albums that were at a basement level of quality kind of thing, where it's like, yeah, music has always been priority one.
Mm-hmm. And your dad, I think, if I remember when I did the interview with you the first time, you were talking about your dad playing those first few chords for you that he wanted to, because you had a peak of interest, and then you know, at 11 I think it was, and he played a couple rock chords for you or something like that. And that's...
your memory is exceptional of this. He played me the chords of Louie Louie. He showed me how to do that on this electric guitar that was his first electric guitar and my first electric guitar, and that was, I was hooked.
Oh, very cool. I couldn't remember what the name of the song was, but I do remember you saying that to me.
Yeah it was like, he was wise about that stuff. He still is, where I think he really saw, and I really try and parrot this when people are asking me, you know, things about getting into music, is that the key is you have to have things that are fun about every step of it. Like, especially when I'll talk to maybe parents who've got like younger kids who are thinking about playing music, and they're toying with, okay, well, do they need to be in like, you know, formal piano lessons or anything like that? And my answer is usually along the lines of like, there's no wrong place. Like, someone who loves learning like classical piano, that's an amazing space for them to be in. But that, like, no matter what it is, you're having fun at every step. Mm-hmm. Like, that there's something, like, my dad was big on like teaching me stuff first that was fun to play on a guitar.
Smart.
before so that you've got something that makes you want to pick it up, as opposed to like, here's this pile of work. Like, you know, people, if you start day one of guitars with scales and complicated chords, it'll sound bad, it'll hurt your fingers, and it will spook you. You know, mm-hmm. it's the idea of getting tossed off the horse right off the bat. Like, I feel like you'd be best off, if you're trying to learn how to ride a horse, to ride a real easy horse on day one that you enjoy, that mm-hmm. you have a good time with. So you've got that in your mind as a memory. Like, cool, I like doing that thing. Now let's see if we can get better at it.
Well, it's so true, because I remember when I started playing acoustic guitar, and I would just sit there and practice, and it's harder on acoustic because it depends. Yeah. And it's just, it was so painful for those first couple.
Totally.
First month, it was like, oh man, am I ever going to enjoy this?
Literally, I've had these conversations with people who have shown me like a guitar they're planning to have their kid learn on. It's again, like an old acoustic guitar with really high action. And I'm always like,
no.
Go buy, like, you can literally go to Walmart and get $125 Squire Fender Electric that has like really low action. Like, my first guitar was this like old 1960s Kent guitar that my dad had, that it's the lowest action I've ever felt on any guitar. Like, you literally can place your fingers on these strings. Like, it's almost impractical mm-hmm. when you're really good at guitar, and that like it's hard to bend on because the action is so low. But for learning how to play those like initial chords and stuff like that, it's great, because me as an 11-year-old, my fingers could do it. But like, I remember now, like, we've got a couple of acoustics my dad has had his whole life, and one of them has like the highest action of any guitar. And to this day, like, if I play it for 20 minutes, my fingers are, well, actually, my fingers can't really get shredded anymore. They're just so calloused, but I feel it. I feel it in them mm-hmm. in ways that I'm like, oh, I'd never give this to someone just starting.
I know. And you want them to be that creative juice flowing. It's like, oh man, I love this sound. And I could do this with it. It's just piquing their curiosity to be able to create, you know?
And that'll make them open the next door. Like, I remember when my dad taught me how to play guitar when I was 11. Then when I was about 14, I finally was like, hey, I want to take some guitar lessons. And that was when I went between about 14 and 17, I got like a guitar teacher to teach me scales and teach me some theory because I wanted it then, mm-hmm. you know, like it wasn't being forced on me. I was like, no, give me that. Like, cool. Show me how, like Jimmy Page, like, how did he do that? Like, let's pick apart how Van Halen plays guitar.
And so you dove in deep.
Oh yeah. I was obsessed. I was a way, way, way better guitar player when I was probably about 18 or 19. That would have been the height of it for me because I was all electric, ripping solos, playing in like a trio. And then the deeper I got into playing country music, I was usually writing on the acoustic guitar, and almost always I had a guy in the room who was so much better at electric guitar than me, like in most, you know, settings. Mm-hmm. Like one of my guitar players would be around, where I never ended up doing that stuff. And I'm kind of getting back into it in the last couple of years, where when I put out Don't Change last year, the guitar solo in that was actually me playing it, like through my dad's old like Viking amp, and through my old, I had a Flying V guitar that I got when I was like 13 years old. I was up at my cabin at the time, so I didn't have my usual like collection of guitars there. I had like stuff more from my teenage years. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, all right, we're going to embrace this. And so that's been fun getting back into, because I feel like I'm playing way more electrics now and just like doing more guitar stuff.
So cool. And a lot of fans don't realize either, unless you are a musician and you play the instruments, to understand that there's such, it's harder to play country than it is rock, and
so
people
technical.
Don't understand.
Oh, it's so it's such a, the parameters are really tight. Like, I remember coming to country, and only now, like, I still can't, there's so much of it that I can't do. I'd be better at playing, like I'm a pretty solid bass player as well. That's something that, like, on a lot of my records, I'll play the bass. On Ain't Got You, I'm playing that, because I played bass in a touring rock band for a number of years. I think I just trust for that I can do that a little closer to like proper. Mm-hmm. I guess not even proper. It's like, it just, at the end of the day, country has such a like tightly, I'll rephrase, the players are so good. The like the people in Nashville, when you go down
the
there,
the studio players,
they are the best. There is no one better. You can throw rock in that city, and every time you'll hit someone who's the best at their instrument, and probably multiple instruments. And so when you're used to hearing that on every country record, you can't just step in there and like play some like sloppy power chords as you
doesn't
can in
work.
Rock. And like I love rock music, but part of what makes rock work is that like more loosely defined, like
it's think, loose. That's, you know, exactly
yeah,
it.
Yeah, trends come along in rock that are like often embracing that. Whereas country, it has this like certain pedigree to it that mm-hmm. like I quite love. I mean, when you get like a good country band playing together, they also like they can really rock. They can blow the doors off because everybody's so good at what they do.
They're shocked, and it's like, wow, because everybody looks at rock and roll and thinking, you know, is or rock music or indie music, any of that, where they're playing the heavy guitar, mm-hmm. the hard guitar riffs, and everybody thinks those are the difficult ones. It's not. It's like,
oh no. You can throw on six pedals and just wail on one note, and like I love, you know, I love that too. There's a, but country, I mean, you get a guy like. You try and rip some like Brad Paisley riffs or something like that.
Yes.
You need to be, that's you can't just show up at the gig and do that.
No.
Like I could sit down for weeks on end if I started right now, I just wouldn't be able to do it. That's years and years
and
to be able
years
to play those
of practice.
Scales like that.
I always remember, you know, I always think of Keith Urban, you know, and how he can play, and just like he can play anything, but man, yeah. Acoustic.
I think Keith's got to be one of my very favorites.
He is mine too.
I was down at the lake yesterday. I'm out of my cabin, and we were listening to, we threw on like some like early 2000s to like probably 2000 to about 2012 kind of country music, which I have a huge love for, and a lot of the Keith stuff in that era.
I love
really
it.
Love.
Oh, my favorite. I have that collection, and it's just, those are my go-tos. It depends on what mood I'm into, but yeah, man, so good. Now when I'm thinking too, it's just like, Chris Stapleton is the one that I gravitate to, you know, when I'm thinking of current. It's just like, there's just so many great players out there.
Yeah, I'm definitely, the stuff I'm kind of working on for my, I guess it'll be my fourth record. So like I just finished my third record. It won't come out till probably later this year or early next year.
October 25th? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what we're talking about, but it's just fun. The deadline of it due to stuff to do with Factor was I'd finished it, record's done, but it won't come out for a bit. So I'm working on my fourth album now. And I think a lot of the stuff is going to be really informed by that, like,
nice.
2000s era. I just like, that's the stuff. It's kind of weird when you think about this. I guess every musician has this happen to them. Because you grow up and you play in an environment of music, and then you start your career and the landscape of music continues to change. Mm-hmm. And like I expected when I started playing country music in the late 2000s kind of thing, I remember like I thought all the stuff I was going to be playing and making was going to be like the Dierks Bentley and Keith Urban and Eli Young band stuff from like 2005 kind of thing. Like that's just like, that's the song, you know, and like Gary Allen and like that was the stuff that I expected to be making. And then the landscape changes and you work with different producers and you make different music along the way. And you think that every artist that you've ever loved probably has like a way that they romanticize the previous era to theirs. Like I suspect no artist looks out at the current landscape of whatever genre they're in and goes, this is my favorite. Because that's not the music that like built you. That's the stuff. Those are your contemporaries.
Those are just the influences in the moment.
And you can love a lot of the stuff in it. Like, again, like when you throw out like Stapleton or something like that, I really resonate with that. Or, you know, I'll listen to like Eric Church stuff and I still feel like it's like really, you know, truthful. But like, yeah, it's just you don't get to like, you can't, it's not possible to learn and be influenced by a music and then be in that music culture. You kind of, you know, time will pass.
That's right.
So I'm finding myself dipping back and being like, oh man, there's a bunch of country stuff from that era that I really want to kind of dig back into, because I love it. It's very guitar driven and it's very just like, it's simpler, and I feel like some of the storytelling in that era was maybe a little more intricate.
Yes.
You know, when you think of like a Blake Shelton song, like that one, the If This Is Austin kind of thing, calling like it's like these longer, like intricate stories that you don't as often see.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'm feeling, you know, regardless of what's acceptable or isn't, it's calling to me right now. So I think I'm going to do some stuff in that kind of world.
I hear you. I am so excited for that. When we're talking about, you know, the different types of evolving music and country and what we end up gravitating to, and I think we're talking about just like the influence that you're hearing in sounds, that's where you'll see a lot of the artists coming up right now and going back and dipping in and saying, hey, you know what, I like this sound, I like when they did this in different years that country music has been there. When you're talking about Chris Stapleton, like to me, when I'm thinking about it, it's just when I think of like the Eagles, I think you know, Springsteen, I think of the great storytellers in music.
I think there's a lot of that stuff from like a Springsteen Eagles kind of era that you would see, and even like, you know, to an extent of like some Tom Petty kind of thing, where you would get guys that like, if they were coming up now, they might be playing country, where like classic rock has kind of branched into a bunch of different things. And so I think it's really cool when you see guys like a Stapleton pulling that kind of stuff. You hear it in their production. You hear it in the songs that they're writing. It's cool. It's neat. I'm a nerd for that kind of like music DNA like
Me
that.
Me too. You know,
and following the history of it and sensing like the lineage of things and being like, oh, cool. Like that song wouldn't exist if that song didn't exist.
Exactly.
That song is totally drawing from like it. It also gives me some hope. I think I sort of touched on this before, of that like you're never going to be as cool as your heroes, and that's okay because your heroes don't probably believe they're as cool as their heroes. You know,
exactly.
I look at like the Beatles playing or something, just because they're, you know, like sort of the height of the mania of their era, and they all, you know, they wanted to be Little Richard, and they wanted to be at times the Beach Boys, and they wanted to be. Losing the it's a duo who would have sang together in really close harmonies,
male or female,
it's guys, it's not It's like, this is like much older. But the long and the short of it is like, if you went inside their brains on the day they played the Ed Sullivan Show or something they would have had their own heroes, you know, in the same way that the Eagles would have had their own heroes and everybody. It allows you then to kind of just let that be okay. Like, there's no version of reality where, like, I finish writing and recording a song and go like, well, that's better than Desperado. Like, good thing I did that. You know, like, anytime, it's always I remember I had one of my songs I was listening to, and then, like, an Elton John song came on after, and I was just like, well, I quit. It's better. But then I kind of have to let it go and be like, you know what? Elton John probably could throw on one of his songs and have something come on after that's one of his heroes and feel the same way. And I'm like, that's just, I think, part of the big creative chain of things.
Exactly. And that's like extending your craft and learning and, you know, being able to put your twist on it with the stuff that you've learned. And you're so good at that. So your third studio album, you've just finished that. Yeah. And we'll be getting into your first release and everything, because I absolutely love it. Congratulations on the 13 million streams that you've got right now.
Thank you so much.
Over 8 million on Apple you just got announced, too.
Yeah.
So great.
Love there. They've been wonderful to me. But in general, like, it's funny we bring that up. Yesterday, I had posted that, and then I only later in the day kind of thought about it. And it's kind of what we were talking about earlier, where, like, you miss... it's easy to like miss the reality and the gravity of it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there are many, many artists out there with far more streams than I have and will ever have. And there are many artists out there with less, with amazing music, and just trying to not be comparative about it and more trying to just like, for me, I just appreciate the people are listening. Yeah. And that there's like, I don't know. It's really a number, like even a million. Humans aren't really good at imagining numbers of that size. Mm-hmm. I more think about like when a friend will text me or like a fan will message me and say like, your song's on at this bar I'm in or something.
Yeah. Like, that never gets old,
day.
Does it?
No, it never gets old. And I don't know. I feel like your heart has to have frozen over for that stuff to get old. So for me, those individual things are huge. And so when you multiply that over the factor of like, oh, there's 13 million of them or something like that, that's a lot of people hearing your song in a lot of bars and a lot of grocery stores and a lot of their cars. And to me, that's music's just been such a big part of my life. Mm-hmm. And I look at the songs that have kind of soundtracked my life, and the little flicker of hope that your own music is soundtracking other people's lives is really cool. Like, that's the most involved I can be in someone else's life, you know, is to have something that, like, a guy who I was writing with recently, there's an artist named Dylan Burke.
Oh,
he
nice.
Was saying to me,
yes.
Yeah, he was saying to me, he's like, oh, this isn't weird, man, but like, you still like always just blast your songs, like when me and the boys would go like down for the weekend kind of thing. And it, you know, it blew my mind, because I was like, oh, man, I was their like Friday night soundtrack for a period of time in his life. Mm. And I think about the artists that have been that for me, and it means a lot, you know, like that stuff I don't take lightly. And I always, because it's always strange to tell someone that, because I've been on the other side of it a million times. And I was always like, dude, this is not weird for me to hear. I'm like, this is cool. This is why we all do it kind of thing, to just like be there in other people's lives in neat ways for them.
Absolutely. Now, yeah. a lot of fans may not realize too is, well, I think they do, because everybody knows everything about you right now, but it's just, you write so much too. Like, we're talking about, you know, the 13 million streams and how important it is, but also the fact that you write so much music out there for other artists at the top
really
of their game.
And
yeah,
getting to do some of the Tyler Joe Miller stuff in the last year or so here has been really fun. You know, like getting to watch what he did with Fighting.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yes.
I mean, that one was big because, like, well, that was the first song I ever wrote with him. He and I and Dan Swinimer and Dave Faber got together. It's a couple of years ago, actually. It was before he had his record deal or anything. And we just, like, it was a really cool song in that, like, we spent probably an hour off the bat. Dan Swinimer was having like some serious back issues that day. Mm. And we almost canceled the ride over. We got there and he was like, guys, I literally got to lie on the floor the whole time. Like, that's where we're at.
Oh, no.
And we're like, all right, we're going to make it work. And so, but it kind of started this conversation where I was like, oh, you know, funny enough, like I've had some serious, like after, it was after the Shania tour, I had some like sciatica issues that like just messed me up for like 2 years where nothing felt right. And then Tyler, it was like, oh yeah, like my neck has this like pinch thing in it where like for the huge chunks of time you needed to see a doctor over it. And Faber had the same story. And I was just like, oh my God. So we're dudes with back issues, but it got us talking more about like I knew all these guys. Well, and it was also that, like, none of us ever talked about it. I was like, you don't post that on social media most of the time. And so I was like, oh man, there's so many things that us as a group have probably like gone through in life and that people go through in life that just you don't end up talking about. So it kind of got us talking about mental health and just like general struggling in life. And so the song kind of bubbled out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it felt like a very natural and organic thing that we arrived at there that day that wasn't contrived. And so, you know, flash forward 2 years later, when he puts it out and it goes in the top 10, that it felt really, it felt really cool though, to have something that was not like that really felt meaningful to us. Like from the beginning, we were all really like invested in that. And so getting to watch that, like
TJ has been great about like forwarding, like messages from fans and stuff to our like group chat, where it's like people tattooing lyrics from that song on themselves, or people like sending a message being like, hey man, like going through a really tough time right now, like this song's getting me through this. That stuff to me, that's the other side of the coin that I love, of like you want to soundtrack the Friday night, but you also want to be there for someone who's struggling on a Tuesday night.
And we were talking about it at the beginning of the show too, and just the snippets of time for you, and when you're seeing that kind of feedback coming in from fans and telling their personal stories, those stick in their mind to, you know, 20 years from now, I remember when this song came out and what it did for me. And it's just that legacy that you're leaving behind that's pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Totally. I mean, that's the stuff you live for, right? Where it's, again, like, if you can be there for someone, like, I remember specifically someone telling me that they, like, my song, Before You Drive Me Crazy, they explained it, like, I won't pick into the details of their story, but it was like they were going through a pretty rough period in their life, and they attributed that as like that was something that was genuine, like they listened to it a couple of times a day and it was like keeping them going. And like I get it, because I've had songs and TV shows and things like that in my own life that have been that kind of crutch there, where sometimes you just need that little, maybe it's a band-aid for you, maybe it's whatever it is, to be that for anyone with something that you've done like this, it feels really special, and it feels, you know, almost beyond my qualifications, where it's like I might not be able to counsel you through what everything you're going through in life, but like if I can give you something that helps you through it, man, please take it. Like that means a lot.
Well, music heals. It doesn't matter whether or not it's a breakup or whether or not it's a happy moment in your life, or, you know, just something that you're dealing with personally. Music is something that we always connect to that event. And, you know, it's always going to be there, and just music's universal. It changes lives. And you've definitely done that. You've also been doing it with an awful lot of your projects that you've been dealing with. Congratulations. I don't even know where to start for you. It's like Paramount Plus, Guilty Party. Pretty awesome. That dark comedy. I'm really looking forward to that.
That one was a lot of fun to shoot. That was the first thing I had gone and filmed after a year of like COVID lockdown kind of thing. This was early in 2021, and it was such a mind-blowing event where like you'd gone from like never being in a room with anyone.
Oh, Zoom. Yes, you would have to do your reads through Zoom.
Yeah, we did the table read through Zoom, but then when we showed up in Calgary, it was like, all right, now you're in a room, there's 75 people here. They've all been COVID tested today, which is good.
Yeah.
But now for the actors, like, take off your masks and pretend life is normal. And it was like, it was profoundly weird, but it was also this like bizarre rush of normal life, when between action and cut, it was you, no one with masks on, and like everything looked normal, and you were interacting in ways that seemed normal, and like, you know,
like,
yeah, it was so weird. And then they'd call cut and everyone blast their mask back on and like go back to COVID living. And this was still pre-vaccine rolling out, and just like, so like a tremendous amount of uncertainty, where it was like they were doing I think the production was run extremely well along those lines, and we were all felt like as safe as I felt as safe there as anywhere, but it was just surreal. But yeah, the experience was great. Kate Beckinsale is a gem. She was really fun to work with. And like,
I was going to ask you what she's like, because I know like the two of you really like, you know, this type of show. And I know that is just something that you guys would feed off of, you know, that funnier, funny guy, I guess, or funnier guy combination.
She was great about just like her character in all the scenes that I was dealing with her. She's very much like, she's the protagonist of the show, but she is losing at this point in time for sure. And we are her terrible coworkers. And so she's just the butt end of a lot of the jokes. And Kate was great about like she had no ego about stuff and was very like, not just okay with looking stupid. She was like pushing it. She was like, there was one scene where I brought in this like Tupperware thing of Fruit Loops, because I'm weird and I bring in my own props a lot of the time.
Oh, do you?
I like to. Yeah, I always clear it with the prop master, and I'm like, oh, today I think I'm eating Fruit Loops. It's like, today I brought a ball. Today I brought a bunch of stuff to put on my desk, and they tend to love it because I always justify, like, it just allows me to make some more choices. And so I'm sitting there eating them, and Kate between takes it, she's like, what if you started throwing those at me, like, while I'm trying to get my lines out, you know, because it was supposed to be her, like, in a meeting of all of her coworkers. And so I didn't tell her when I was going to do it, but I would just start pegging her in the face with Fruit Loops. And it was great because it gave her something to play off of that was just like pushing her button. It gives me so much love and respect for her as someone who like I've worked with actors who have egos that don't let them go to places like that.
Yeah, they don't loosen up. Yeah.
Yeah. But then you can't take the character on a cool trip if they're like, for her to eventually win, she's got to be losing at some point. That's what you cheer for.
That's true. In a
protagonist. And so for her to be getting beaned with Fruit Loops while she's trying to give an impassioned speech, I mean, I'll do that all day long. It was very fun.
I'm right there with you.
I was just like, what the hell is life right now? This is great.
This is work. Yeah, we're working, but you know what? Hey,
But I guess she's so talented and she's so funny, and she would very frequently have like notes and thoughts and ideas for people in scenes of just like other funny stuff to try. It was very collaborative. I've never worked on a show where it was so open
off the cuff. Yeah.
Everybody just like trying different stuff. They were very encouraging, where they're like, just give us something different, try something different. And it was just like, you got to run with it. And I love that.
Oh, so cool. I like those kinds. You know, like, I've been on a lot of sets in my time, and, you know, to be able to have that on the spot, off the cuff, just being able to adjust and having a writer on scene, which is very rare.
Oh, it was the head writer and creator was there all the time. Which was so rad because
she was there the whole time.
Oh, she was there every day, and it was wonderful because it was like literally this great team of like whoever was directing each episode and her and Kate, mm-hmm. and then whatever actors were in the scene. And it was very much like democratic of just like, what do you want to try? You want to try that? Cool, let's do that. Let's do it this way now. I'd never been on a show that was that open to, because sometimes you work on shows that are very stilted and very like, hey, that butt was an and. Like, and I get that if you're Aaron Sorkin, you know, and you've got like something that's a really well written piece. But sometimes to me, I'm like, I don't know, if you've got a group of actors who all get their character and they're doing and like, as, you know, get it the way it's written, you know, a couple of times. But then beyond that, like, I personally, I don't like to give 10 takes in a row that are the same.
Exactly.
Because I feel like I'm not helping the director or the editor at that point. Like, I feel like my job is actually a lot more like a session musician. Like, if you think about, I always, in comparing music to acting, would say the comparable is being an actor is like being a studio musician. It's not like being the artist. Being the artist is more like being a director or a producer, mm-hmm. or a writer. Mm-hmm. Being an actor, you're just one of the colors of the paint set. You know, so if I've got a session musician in, I don't want them to play the same guitar solo 6 times. I want them to give me 6 different options, and then we can make some choices. Maybe we can cut Very them true. Up and make something cool. So for me as an actor, my MO usually is like, cool, I'll give you a couple that are kind of how it is on the page. And then I'd like to start pushing other places, trying different things, so that when you're editing, you can go, oh, no, it's this one or it's that one. Oh, we want it bigger here, we want it smaller here. Then we actually have some options, because mm-hmm. I feel like otherwise you hamper someone in the editing suite where you're like, all right, I got 6 of the same thing.
So what do I do with that? I mean, I guess you're splitting hairs.
It's like a photographer going out there and learning their camera at first, and they fire off like 200 shots, and they're looking at the same thing, and they're editing all 200.
Oh, it's totally. Like... oh, and I can't. I mean, now, like, if we're shooting music videos, I used to do a million takes, and now I will oftentimes intentionally undershoot like a performance piece where mm-hmm. I'm like, we'll get two takes of it, and I know there's some stuff we're missing, and I'm okay with that because I'm like, I will do something different in the edit.
Exactly, the creative side part of comes
it's
just, out.
It's the creative side. Part of it's the lazy side, and I mean that in an okay way. Where I'm like, I used to watch, like, I'd go and shoot somebody do something, and I have to watch 14 takes of them do the same performance piece, and then you're like, hey, do they look better when their mouth is that much open or that much open? Now I'm like, cool, we got two takes. It's either in there or we're gonna cut to something else. And I don't want to watch that many takes. So I find it's almost. You just, technology right now allows you unlimited choices. You can recap things so many ways. But sometimes I feel like forcing some limitations on yourself mm-hmm. is almost a good thing. Like I always, you know, there's sometimes just like it helps you. You will pick new ways around. So, yeah, you'll learn. And you won't drive yourself crazy. There are a number of things. This is a piece of advice Derek Rutan gave me a number of years ago.
Oh, he's so good. He's one of my
Jedi
faves.
Master.
Yeah.
That guy, he said to me, he's given me some good mentoring advice over the years. And I was fretting about one of the many things that I was fretting about at that point in time. It was early in my career. And he had said, like, look, Wes, something that I do is I try to think about, if I have a decision to make, will I care about the outcome of this decision in 1 year, in all likelihood? And if I won't, then it probably doesn't really matter. You know, like, you can probably kind of go either way on it. And if I will care about it in a year, then maybe it is worth putting the time in. And I try and apply that, apply that creatively a lot. Mm-hmm. Where you go, okay, I'm like going through this song here, and I'm trying to pick is this an A or an A flat in this thing here in this scale. And if I think about like, will anyone ever notice? Will I even care in a few months from now what I choose? And a lot of times the answer is no. Where it's just
it's
like,
so true.
I'm not going back and looking at records of mine from 2 albums ago and picking apart how much reverb there was on a snare shot, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I might appreciate some of those things, and you always want to try and make the best decisions you can at the time, but inherently in art you zoom so far in, and just in life, right, where mm-hmm. you can get so caught up in
you do the small stuff that just doesn't matter, and you don't learn until you're so much older. And you know, we hear that advice coming at us all the time, but we always forget it until we start thinking it years ago. Oh yeah, that advice was given to me a long time ago.
Totally.
Yeah, and I just didn't pay attention. Yeah,
a lot of advice I got in the early chunk of my life that like I either didn't listen to or didn't understand at the time, you know. Yeah. there's all kinds of little bits of that where like years later you get it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that you can only get that stuff when you get it, but like
we gotta go through yeah. stuff in order to actually apply that, because it was like, you know, what do I do right now? And it's just like, oh yeah, I do remember somebody talking about this, and it does stick to you.
Totally.
You just gotta feel the pain
first. If you keep getting the same piece of advice over and over, and then you have some life applications, that's where it starts to stick, you know.
That's
I always feel kind of silly sometimes in interviews, because I espouse whatever wisdom and chunks that I've picked up over the years, and then I'll, you know, think about it later and be like, do I follow that? And it's like, I try to, but yep. It's like, and you can give good advice, and I believe that Derek Rutan thing 100%. Mm-hmm. Do I live by it all the time? Absolutely not.
None of us do.
Sometimes I absolutely fixate on things that I probably won't care about this in 5 minutes. But so I think it's, you know, as with most things in life,
it's repetitive.
Best you can. Yeah, you do the best you can, you on repeat, and you see if you can get through another day doing okay.
Well, we just get better at it, and we just keep doing that repetitive reminding, and eventually we get it. You know, it's just, you know, it just depends on what's going on. But with your schedule, a little tough for you to be applying that all the time. Tell us about what the series is about, because I look at it, clickbait culture.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, opinion.
The kind of deal with it basically is that like Kate's playing this discredited journalist. Like she just like imagine she's winning, you know, all kinds of awards and stuff at the height of her career. You kind of see that. And then the show I think is set like
5 years after or something, where basically she gets discredited and somebody claims that she made up a quote, mm-hmm. or she like that she made up a bunch of quotes, and so her career gets torched, and we find her in the now basically working at a crappy like clickbait kind of play. I think we're called Pop Bite. We're kind of like a bad mm-hmm. version mm-hmm. of BuzzFeed or something, you know. We're just like a it's not a bastion of good journalism, and basically it's her trying to A, rebuild her career and credibility, but also the like interesting complication is that she gets a letter from this woman named Tony, who is in jail for murdering her husband, and she says she didn't do it, and she's black, and it becomes this like, and I point that out because her race ends up being a thing where the, you know, some of Kate's coworkers are accusing her of, oh, you're only trying to save her because you're trying to be the like, you know, the savior white woman. They're pointing out like the imperfections of the logic of that, and Kate like through it is pretty altruistic mm-hmm. and is like, no, like this woman has been wrongly accused, like I don't care what her background is, but also has the motive of fixing her own career. So she is both like noble in it for wanting to help this woman, but also very self-centered for wanting to help herself mm-hmm. and it actually sets up this really cool story, because I don't think any human does anything that's not in their own self-interest. Even someone who goes and is a philanthropist and spends a ton of time trying to help other people and doing good stuff, they're still getting something out of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes them feel good. So it's neat to watch her be both like altruistic and good, but also just like trying to save her own skin. And mm-hmm. she's like a deeply flawed person surrounded by terrible coworkers and a relationship that's kind of got some junk going on with it. And generally a journalistic community that wants to take her down. And then she gets pulled into this whole world of like crazy gun runners. And it's just like, sounds it's pretty so zany. Cool. Yeah. It's just like wacky black comedy. Nice. It's really funny. It's quite good.
Now it airs October 14th, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's already out.
Oh, it's already out now. I didn't know that.
No worries. You know, and it had a different release date. When it originally dropped, I think it was only in the States. I think you can get it in Canada now through Paramount Plus, but there's some weird stuff around the Paramount Plus subscription, I think, in Canada. I tried looking it up.
And yeah, because I didn't see it.
I think you need to get like an Apple TV Plus. I don't, there's a chance, in my opinion, that it's not on the Canadian one right now.
Yeah.
Because I, too, tried to pull it at one point, and it was there for a stretch of time, and then it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things. I know Paramount Plus is still gaining full steam in Canada. I think it's a lot bigger presence.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the States. So it might be one of those things that you end up kind of getting a soft relaunch of it at some point in Canada. Because I know with a lot of that stuff, they're really focused on the U.S., and again, as an actor in the show, I am the last person to really know.
To
these
know
things.
When anything comes out.
I was just like messaging other actors on it, and I think I sent a message to the creator, who's also Canadian. How do I watch this? And they were like, I don't know. And then my uncle pirated it, and I was like, I guess that's
I can't say that.
Show.
Yes.
I was like, all right, that's maybe not my public opinion of it, but I'm like, that's how things are going at this point. I mean, I can't verify he actually did that, you know, for the record. Yeah, that might just be hearsay. but yeah, long and the short of it, you can keep your eyes peeled for it. I assume it will be readily available everywhere at some point in time if it's not already. But yeah, it's a fun show.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. There's a couple of them that we're going to talk about towards the end of the show there, and that you're doing right now, because there's just so much to cover. As the singer-songwriter, when you're looking, what has been the biggest change that you've noticed in your writing from 2013 to the writing today?
The biggest change in like the writing process?
For you personally, yeah. What it means to you and what you notice about yourself.
It's interesting. I mean, I think it's kind of this like interesting pendulum where it's like, I have a lot more tools in the old toolbox at this point in terms of writing, just from writing with a lot of people. And so there's a lot of things where I think I'm probably a much better technical writer. But I do think sometimes that can get in the way of when you're really green at writing, you'll just do things and like then you won't know why. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they work really well. So I think the balancing act now a lot of times is, I think in the last, you know, year or so, I've really gotten to a place where I'm like, whatever I do first is right. We're just going to go with it. Because mm-hmm. I think you hit a point in craft when you like know enough you can start talking yourself out of writing good songs,
mm-hmm.
where you know enough to know, oh, this is maybe isn't the best way to do this. Whereas you kind of have to, like, the ideal version of me on a good writing day now and how it relates to me writing, you know, years ago was both versions. I want to take my first impulses and mm-hmm. run with them. And I hope that now the advantage I have is that, like, cool, you take this organic thing you want to do, but now I'll know, okay, this part of the chorus feels like it's not jumping. It feels like it's not exciting to me, but I have written with 100 guys over the years, and this guy all have interesting tricks to pick up that part of the chorus, because everybody's got fingerprints all over their song.
So true.
And I find you end up just, like, picking off, like, there's one guy for sure that he has a little tactic that I know is a good way to, like, pop a certain part of the chorus. And it's like, I don't want to do that every time, because then it becomes just like you're making a sausage kind of thing. It becomes just like, it's, you know, too repetitive. But it's a nice thing when you're in a jam to sometimes be able
pull
to
pull that out. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard this, I was listening to this Jake Gyllenhaal interview one time where he was talking about, like, acting craft and he was basically, he was kind of explaining working on, like, the difference between just being, like, genuinely connected and present in the moment and doing, like, the kind of stuff that any of us would regard as, like, the really good acting stuff that feels really good and feels really truthful, and then relying on the other hand, relying on craft and, like, technical things that might mm-hmm. not feel as, like, organic, but it'll get you through. And he was kind of explaining it like this roller coaster ride of, like, you want to always be in the pure, in the moment, like, just thinking, you know, as your character and being in that. But sometimes you're not going to, because a camera is going to move and you got to step over some wires and you got to deal with the reality that you are making a piece of art. It's not actually happening. And that's where you rely on, like, the training and the craft,
mm-hmm.
get you through those things with technique. And I find it's the same for songwriting, where it's like, you want to just put your core feelings down into a song. But sometimes you're going to need to know that, like, cool, if we pop it over to this chord while we're doing this part of the song, it's going to do this. It's going to add up to that. So you can mix those things together and go, this original, cool, organic idea with all this neat technical stuff around it. And hopefully that's how you make the best song.
Very, very cool. I just want to be in the studio with you just one time. Well, a couple of times. I would love to be in there all the time, but you know what I mean? Hey, I would just love it.
I was kind of thinking about doing it. So I would be neat to do something like that of, like, you know, gather a few people around and have some kind of, like,
mini documentary,
like pseudo kind of documentary interview type thing while writing and creating a song. I think it could be kind of neat.
Wouldn't I love that? I've been asked to do it so many times, and I know with Carlos Morgan and same thing with Lighthouse, and, you know, I would love to do that. We're gonna have to talk about that, you and I.
Yeah, yes, please. That would be really fun.
100%. For me, it would be perfect. Just to watch you and how much you've changed. Because I've been, you know, at the beginning of your career right through, and just to watch who you are today. You got all these hats that you wear.
I mean, amazing. You don't really expect to get into, or at least I didn't kind of expect to do a number of these things as I got into it. You just kind of, one thing opens the next door, you know. It's like I started playing in a band, playing guitar and singing, and over the course of that time, sometimes you'd swap instruments just for fun. Mm-hmm. I learned how to play the drums, and I learned how to play the bass, and then, we want to do a music video, but we don't have any money, and we don't know what we're doing.
You're
so I'm
good at
get
that.
A camera, and I'm going to buy a book. Like, I remember when I wanted to start doing that stuff, I bought a camera, and I went and bought the fourth-year film textbook from UBC. I was not in film, but I just went and bought their final year textbook, and I just read it cover to cover, and I was like, all right, we're gonna try and apply some of this stuff. And I was probably terrible at it at the beginning, but that started me off directing. And honestly, I really just got thrown, you know, I'd done a little bit of tinkering around, and then a buddy of mine hired me to direct his music video.
I remember
a little
that.
Deeper in,
yeah.
And then I remember I was doing the duet video with another director, and we had to fire him midway through the shoot due to some really crazy stuff that was going on. And all of a sudden, I was stranded in the middle of the first shoot that CMT was, like, funding, and it was supposed to be my first single. And I was like, oh my God, I can't tell them that, like, the budget's gone and there's no music video. I was like, all right, looks like I'm directing now and editing and color correcting this, like, large scale music video production. And I remember stepping up and doing that and thinking, like, all right, I'm going to sink or swim by this. And 1 year later,
I remember it
winning
was
the award.
For, I think it was yeah, it was like up for video of the year, and I was up for director of the year, and I was like, if they only knew the chaos that was this video.
That's right. That's right. I say you're just so a natural.
But life will push you into those things. I feel like
it does, because I know for myself, you know, where I started. You know, in front of the camera, and I ended up coming behind the camera because that's, you know, I knew we could get so much more out of different situations like you. That's just the creative side, you know, of us that, I know what I can do with this. I know what I can see, what I envision, and that's where it all starts.
And, yeah, and you just got to embrace that, like, whatever that side of your vision is.
That's right.
Yeah, and I usually think, you know, the fun is a good indicator.
Always, like, if you're not,
if you can find
fun,
something that you enjoy, that's got to enjoy it. To me, that to me is the stuff that leads me to that, like, early 2000s country. We were sitting there by the lake yesterday listening to it. We were listening to Zach Brown's Chicken Fried, right?
Chicken Fried.
And I was just like, man, the fun is just hardwired into the song. Like, I can't listen to this and not feel happy about it.
Exactly.
And this, it got me so stoked. I was just like, I came back and I was working on another tune last night. And I was just, that's the stuff where, like, I'm still a big music fan. I feel like I need that to, like, juice me up every now and then, to just go throw on, like, records I love, or watch a TV show I love, or a movie I love. And it makes me want to go and do it.
Exactly. It just gives that kick in the butt of inspiration, you know, when we need it the most. And it's just really cool. Let's talk about this third album of yours that you just finished. Are you going to be doing how many songs is on this one?
This one will be six.
Six? Okay.
I believe that we have done.
All right. Now, you've got your first one. We're going to talk about that. And that's the lead off single for this one. And that's Ain't Got You. And I love this song. What a great song.
Thank you so much. It was, I think it's the only one on this record and the only single I've ever put out that I was the sole writer, like, that I had no co-writers on. Normally I don't do it, because usually I'm just like, if I wrote it alone, it can't be that good. I got to pull somebody in to, like, spell check this thing. But it just felt, I was writing,
take you back to when you were in the beginning, when you were writing on your own.
Yeah.
Before all
really
the co-writes
did.
And stuff.
It makes you trust it. It makes you trust it a little bit. And it was funny, I'd done a co-write the night before, and I wrote a song that for another artist, and I remember waking up the next morning and kind of feeling this pang of regret, being like, ooh, I think that was a really good one, and I gave that away. Like, that's not my song now. And like, I'm always happy when other artists are cutting my stuff, but it just, like, it was bugging me while I was eating breakfast. I was like, should I have done that?
I gotta do that better.
Literally, it was out of pure spite that I was just like, you know what I can do? I'll just write a better song right now alone, and then I won't care. And I was just like, all right, here, that's what we're gonna do. So I was sitting there eating a bowl of Fruit Loops. I picked up my guitar and I wrote it in about probably 15 or 20 minutes. And I just, like, recorded a little version of it, and I was like, and I just went about my day, didn't really think about it again. I was just really happy. I was like, all right, I think I did it. Yeah, I think that one feels. And then I came back and listened to it a day later, and I'm like, oh, that's got to go on the album for sure.
Awesome.
It was written so fast. It was because it was kind of a pressure off scenario where I was just like, the whole purpose of it was just to alleviate my, like, sometimes when you write something like that and you give it away, you're like, oh no, I'll never write one that good again. It felt like I just needed to sit and write something that felt good to me. And so it was very quick.
Here is the new single, Ain't Got You, by country artist Wes Mack, here on Music's Journey.
Maybe we could talk, maybe take a walk. You're probably right, we're probably just fine. We used to get loud, we hit out on the town. I used to take you home, now I'm sitting here alone, trying to figure out what to do now. I could head out on the dance floor, find a pretty girl and drink some more. I could call
Single Ain't Got You, and I'm loving this one. This is the lead single off the upcoming new album by country star Wes Mack. What a great song. Incredible.
Seriously, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun, and this one was like a lot of the production. My headphones fell off. Hang on. We're coming back. And we're back. I rock my headphones off.
Gotta love live, don't you?
Yeah, you got it. It's just, I thought I could take my hoodie off gracefully there.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
There
didn't
we go. Well, we didn't have you on Zoom. That's the good thing.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Me on Zoom is a terrible entity.
Me too.
Not good. I'm better in an audio format.
That's right.
Getting to do the production on this was neat. Like I produced up like a pretty full demo of it, and then I ended up so Dan Swinemar is a guy that like
I love him.
He's so good. I love him as a human, and I love him as a co-creator, and we'd been doing a bunch of writing for some of the Tyler Joe Miller stuff, and we'd written one of David James's songs, and just in general, like we write together a lot. He's kind of my go-to call, like if I've got a co-write with someone. Mm-hmm. I'm always like, do you want to add a third? I just want to put Dan in this, right, because I love writing with that guy. But I'd never done any production stuff with him. We live pretty close to each other, or at least like, you know, both in the kind of general Vancouver area. And I just called him up out of the blue. I was like, hey man, like I know we work together on a ton of stuff, but you want to take the reins on one of these things? And he was so stoked. Like he played the demo that I'd done of it and got back to me right away, and it's just like super jazzed on it. And it was really fun working with him. It was just like, it was easy in that like I liked that Dan disagreed with a couple of things. Like overall we were very in sync, but he disagreed with me on a couple of things on it, and he was like, and he was right, you know. There was points in time where I really love that, like I said off the bat, I'm always like, I want someone who pushes back on stuff. And then he would concede on other things when we were producing this, where it was like, oh, cool, you want to, like at one point he wanted to swing the drums more, and I thought they were straighter at one point, right? And it's another section, he wanted more of this one guitar and I wanted less of it. And it's just little things where like, I know this
makes a
trivial,
difference, yeah.
But it ends up being like, I like having something to push off there who isn't just saying yes.
It's
I find it really helpful as a creative, because then you have to, you got to prove your good ideas. You got to say, no, this is why this is going to work. It's not just keeping it this way for no reason. And so we ended up like pushing back and forth on this thing, and I mean I think I'm over accentuating the push back and forth, because in general he just kept doing things that were better than what I could have imagined for it. I was really stoked.
That's why he's so good at what he does.
Like, yeah,
just when you're looking at the caliber, you know, of these producers and what they can do, you learn as you go, and you'll remember, you know, down the line, you know, as you continue to grow as a director and producer yourself.
Oh, totally. I mean, I think the thing with Dan that I love the most is how much he believes in the artists he works with. Like, I've never worked with someone gave me more confidence, and who made me just like feel more at ease in my own skin. Of just like, he's very supportive like that, and very I don't know, he just like, he buys in, he's all in, you know, and he's there with you for the whole thing. And just like, I'm doing a couple more other songs on my record with him. It was just like a really easy working relationship. We already do so much writing together, and he really liked a lot of like my production choices too. Like there was a bunch of stuff we kept from my demo, like all the big BG vocals in this was stuff I just recorded all that in my house.
Oh wow.
And that was all done in my original demo, and I sent it over to him. He initially listened to it, because I've got some, like, it's really like the quality of the recording on those is really low, and they're really chunky, and like a lot of the vocals, if you actually isolate the tracks, they're like pretty messy. And he initially was like, all right, we're probably gonna need to redo all these, and I was like, yeah, I figured we might. And then like a week later, he's like, oh no, I listened to them a bunch, there's something weird, like there's something magic in there, like we're just gonna leave those alone.
Cool.
Just leave them. So I was really stoked, because that, to me, the big like BG section on this is one of my like favorite parts of the song, and so that was that was cool to get to leave in there. And there's, I think I played the bass on it and a few other guitar things, but then he grabbed a couple other players who just like took it to a far higher level than anything I would have done.
Nice. I cannot wait to see what's coming out behind this one, because if this is any indication of these six songs, I am so looking forward to it. When do you think you're going to be releasing this summer?
There'll be another single that'll come definitely this year. Mm-hmm. And then I think the full record will end up being like spring of next year.
Okay.
I could be wrong. It could be earlier than that. I've been chronically wrong about the release dates of my albums over the years. I could almost do a highlight reel of when I said Edge of the Storm was coming out, when I said Soul was coming out, and just repeatedly wrong dates changed. So I've kind of gotten to a place where I don't know. We'll put it out. There are a number of factors that kind of end up going into that. And this one's weird, though, because it's done. Usually I'm like working on it down to the night before kind of thing. And then this one, I'm like, I was working on a song last night that'll probably go on my fourth album, which is so strange. I've never been in
that position.
It doesn't
surprise
before.
Me with you. It just doesn't anymore.
Well, it's like, there was some stuff like that. I think like Don't Change, which is gonna be on this next record, I was working on the seed of that while working on Soul. So that was one of the ones that like bled over. There's a bunch of songs like that where like I ended up pushing that one down the line because I just didn't think it fit that record. And I was like, oh, I think it's gonna fit better on the next one. It did. And there's even songs, I have a few outtakes from like the original Edge of the Storm like sessions. Mm-hmm. And I've just been waiting for there's one of them for sure that I want to put out, but I'm just like, I'm trying to find the right record for it. It might be this fourth one, because it feels like the most 2000s-y country of like a lot of my stuff. So if I'm doing an album like that, maybe I'll include it in there. I mean, it becomes a weird thing when you've got like, I've got like hundreds of demos that I've recorded, and a lot of them are just like, it's just finding that either the time to finish it or deciding like, oh, this is a song I really want to release now.
Just the
like,
different projects, yeah, that's going to be perfect for them. So what I want to do is just do a quick bunch of firing questions at you for burning questions. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Promise me when the next one comes out, you're going to be back on here and we'll go at length and we'll talk about it when we've got a little bit more time, because I love talking to you. I always have.
Yeah. And I quite enjoy it myself. I really do.
You're
very good at this, and you're well researched, and you also are like a creative yourself, and that is evident. So it's really nice, because it's just more of a conversation at the end of the day.
It's just more of a fun thing, and that's what I really enjoy, and that's what I like to pull out when it comes to doing these, because there's nothing worse than just being able to go on air and go, okay, you know what, we're going to be doing, yep, this is the song, how's your writing process?
Oh, I know.
When are you touring?
And you're into these sound bites and you're just like, oh my God.
Same thing.
And my brain shuts down. I don't say anything relevant. I'm terrible in those situations, because I feel like all context is out the window, and it just becomes like, it's a good song, please listen. I'll be playing soon, please come.
This is the next show.
I like music, thanks for listening. Have a good night. I'll let myself out.
It's so true. It's so true. Okay, quick fire questions. Here we go. All right. Favorite pizza to bring to your cabin?
Pepe's. Pepe's is the best. It's this little place near here. Pepe's Italian Fuel, four cheese pizza, end of story.
Oh, I was going to say. I thought there would be a few more in there. Okay, so favorite is...
If I can include one other one, which then I will include, Spiro's Pizza in Calgary. Those are my two absolute favorite pizza places in the world. The family that runs the place, Spiro's in Calgary, nicest people around. If you are in Invermere, go with Pepe's. If you're in Calgary, go with Spiro's. Those are my high recommendations.
And the ads are brought to you by...
yeah.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome.
I am not affiliated.
No, but it's awesome because so many people, you know, giving those shout outs is just really important.
Those are both non-chain places that are just... I've been going to both of those since I was a little kid. The people are
what
wonderful
makes,
there.
Yeah.
Oh, when I was shooting... I know it's supposed to be rapid fire, but when I was shooting Guilty Party in Calgary, I ordered a pizza from Spiro's, and this was during, everything was still locked down, all restaurants were closed, but they were doing takeout, so I ordered a pizza, and I just gave my name, and I didn't want to make a big thing of it. I didn't know for sure who I had on the phone, and so I left my name with them, and they recognized it because they've known me since I was a kid. There's a Westmac photo up in the restaurant that's right across from the country station there. So it's always good for a laugh. But they sent me a pizza with like a personalized note to me, just being like, "You're family to us. Like, if you need anything while you're in town, like, nice. Let us know." Like, and I called them back after it. Just like it touched my heart, and that I was just like, you don't get that. Mm-hmm. In many places in life, so I hold on to those things tightly.
Especially with the amount of touring you're doing too. Exactly.
Yeah.
100%. Favorite NC4 game to play?
NC4. I think I would go Donkey Kong 64 overall.
Oh, very cool. I didn't expect that one. Very cool. Okay. Favorite TV series that you binge watched, I guess, during COVID, or one that's out right now?
Ooh, Severance right now. Sci-fi show on Apple TV Plus. Just finished watching it a couple nights ago. I was told by a friend of mine it's the best sci-fi I'd seen in ages. Going totally blind, that would be my recommendation to anyone. Just, it's real good sci-fi.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. Favorite song on Canadian radio right now? Any genre?
Any genre? Oh man, that's tough. I'm gonna maybe go... Oh man, I'm freezing on this tremendously. I don't know. Does it have to be a current? Can I pull anything from
the
past?
Yeah.
Cool. Go listen to Our Lady Peace. It's Clumsy. It's on my mind for some reason right now.
Very cool. Okay. One place anywhere in the world that you would love to perform.
It's not even like a huge venue. The Coke Stage, Calgary Stampede. I've played at Nashville North, which is arguably like a larger stage, but that was where I went and watched every concert when I was like a teenager, before I was of age, when I later was working as a bartender at Stampede. Like, I would go and watch concerts at the Coke Stage. It's just like, it means a lot to me.
It is. It's a great, great place. Okay, one thing that you need to have with you besides your guitar when you are away filming or on tour with your music. So it could be an item, could be food, could be, I don't know.
A real thick book.
Nice. Yeah. Is there a book you're reading right now?
Yeah, I'm reading a book by Brandon Sanderson called Oathbringer. It's part of the Stormlight Archive.
Nice.
It's this huge fantasy series. There's four of them so far. Each of them are 1,200 pages. Very
so good, aren't
sleeping.
They?
Oh, yeah. I just love them.
Really, really good. I know. We got so much in common. Holy cow.
Have you read that series?
Yes.
Oh, no way.
Yes. Okay, yeah, it's like so good. It's so good. You're going to love it. You're going to love it.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm Oathbringer. I'm loving. I think Rhythm of War is out, so I'll get that next.
I won't tell you anything.
Yeah, please don't. There's the twists and turns in this.
It's
the
really
last
good.
Few pages of Words of Radiance blew my mind.
You're gonna love it. You're gonna love it.
Thank you.
Okay, so if you could give one piece of advice to a younger Wes Mack, what would it be and why?
Oh man, I would say invest in people beyond anything else. I think the thing that I have learned, in the same way of that family who runs Spiro's, similar deal for one's career and just your happiness in life, is that like successes and accolades and business things and parts and songs will all come and go, but the important people in your life stick around, and they are both helpful from like a emotional, psychological, like life way, but also in terms of like making your own career wheels turn. When you surround yourself with people that actually believe in you and that you believe in them and that you like dealing with them, life is both more fun, and I think you're like success comes to that. And I find when you surround yourself with people who are just there for a paycheck, or there quickly, who are there because something's going well, those people come and go pretty quickly.
And you know it. You definitely know it. And it just, that experience is just pretty precious. Great answer. Love that one. Very, very good. Now, one last one, my favorite of all time. It's just, I love asking this one. What is your best, most useless talent?
Oh, my best, most useless. Oh, here we go. My best, most useless talent. I can, my memory, I have a very photographic memory, but I also have a very musical memory, and I can probably sing every single television ad and childhood like jingle from all the TV shows, like with every lyric and note of songs that I haven't heard in 25 years.
Okay, happy day.
Oh, but I didn't.
Oh,
it,
no.
It has to be a show that I did.
Okay.
That I like was big into. So it's kind of like 90s era stuff for me is probably the like highlight of it.
Okay, name one just off the top of your head.
Like Sticking Around or something. Before your big fat information, this is our imagination. Me and my friend Bradley, what we draw is what you see. Stick around and help us to explore. See the world like you never seen before. Dun dun dun, say it loud. All you have to do is stick around, Bradley.
That's awesome.
And I don't know why it's there. And there's no.
I'm gonna stump you. I'm gonna stump you on the next one.
Yeah, I mean,
next time I interview you, I'm gonna be stumping you.
If you pull up 90s kind of era cartoons or like commercials that were on,
okay.
I can pull them out. But if I didn't watch it, then I'll be hooped. Well, I don't know why those things are still with me, but they are.
I'm gonna test you. I'm gonna remember that.
I welcome
that. Okay. Now we gotta just quickly talk about this. So you're doing Honey Girls. You just finished doing that one, and that's amazing too. We haven't talked about that. When's that one coming out?
That one is out now as well too. So that one, I think they just put it out on Netflix in the States. So I wonder if it'll swing. A lot of these again have like different release dates.
Exactly.
In the States from Canada, because I don't think it's been read. I think you can maybe get it on like the iTunes store or something if you want to pay for it. But yeah, that was a new one. I mean, I got to play like a music. I was supposed to be the best music producer and writer in the
big
world.
Big time, yeah.
And we were actually in a studio in Vancouver that I had worked out of. So it was kind of neat that I was back on home turf.
Very cool, very cool. I know you were working on a new movie too, and you were playing. I think you had to learn like a bunch of songs. You were playing a musician, right?
Yeah. That was, I was doing a Christmas movie that was just like, I got cast and like a week later needed to know and record
eight
Christmas songs,
like
including one that was like, they actually got me to write a song. So I actually took a song that I wrote with my dad and got it in the movie. And I recorded like a full orchestral version of it. And I did this whole thing where I got it cleared. And I knew it was going to be in the movie. And I didn't tell my dad this. And so on Christmas Day, my family, we sat there and we watched. He knew I was in the movie, but he had no idea that a song he wrote and that he had actually played on a bunch of the recording. All of a sudden it just starts playing, and it was like the coolest thing to watch. It just like blew his mind. He was just like,
that's such a moment.
I'd done a lot of orchestrating on that, where I was just like, because I had to, technically he would have needed to sign off on it, but I basically had to convince a bunch of people, like, allow me to forge his signature, because here's why. Here's what I'm doing. I promise I'm not trying to like screw him over out of his song. I want to surprise him on Christmas Day.
Oh, that is so, so cool. That's great.
Yeah,
that's fun. Yeah, that's so much fun. Is there anything that you're working on right now?
I've got a Netflix series that's coming out in a few months called The Imperfects, but I'm done shooting that. Right now, mainly working on like some music stuff for album 4. And there's technically album 3. I'm actually still doing a couple of mixes, like I'm done recording, but we're going back and forth on some mix notes, so that's getting wrapped up. And then I'm doing a few it's actually a few TV shows that I'm developing from like the side of like a writer producer. So there's a couple of those at different stages of development, some that we're actively like pitching and selling, and one that like is just getting off the ground that I've got a meeting for in a day.
Wow.
It just is in the creative stages. So it's a lot of that, but I'm trying to do a little bit of a relax here.
I'm out of my cabin for a little bit.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And so as I was, because, you know, finishing the record was sort of the big push there for a couple of months. So I'm trying to take a little space here. Hence, you know, being down at the lake in the middle of the week yesterday, listening to Zac Brown.
Oh, so cool. Well, I know how much you love it up there and how you can unwind. And it's just, like, as I said, we've got so much in common. It's not funny.
Oh, totally. I can't believe you still have written Stormlight Archive. I'm always amazed. That one has I posted a picture of the book the other day and a bunch of people had sent me like, oh, I love this. And I always feel like I'm out on such an island when I'm reading like high fantasy stuff.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, I love it. I love how many people I find coming out of the woodwork who love that stuff too.
Absolutely. It never gets old for me. We want to remind everybody you can download Ain't Got You. You can download that on all your streaming platforms. You can also add it to all your playlists and request it at your local country radio station. Such a great tune. We cannot wait for some more that are going to be coming out. And thank you so much for coming, and I'm really hoping that we can, you know what, maybe we'll just do a film day.
Yeah,
I'll have you on just doing a film day and we can talk about all that stuff. And
hey, that would be wonderful. Yeah, I can dig into all the, if the longer I do this, the more I realize I got a bunch of wacky stories. You start off your career and you have like two stories you can tell, and then you get deeper into it and you're like, oh man,
let's do
crazy
it.
Crazy stuff's happened to me over time.
I know, and I can tell this would be such an entertaining podcast, so it'll be really cool. So will you come back for that?
Oh, I would love to.
I will set that up right away and we'll get that all done. Maybe we'll do that in June.
That sounds amazing.
When we got a little bit more time, so that's great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure. I miss you. Miss being out on the road and being able to bump into you there.
Yeah, I miss that too. But thanks for having me on today. This is really fun.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. Congratulations. You are making Canada so darn proud, my friend. So proud. You are just doing such amazing things, and congratulations for all of your accomplishments. And don't forget every single one of them.
Seriously, that's good advice to bookend this thing. So thank you so much, Kim. I appreciate it.
All right, you take care.
Thanks for doing this, Kim. Have a lovely day.
And you too. We'll see you soon. A great big thank you to my very special guest, singer, songwriter, actor, and director, Wes Mack, for coming on the show. I've got some great shows coming up for you. I'll be interviewing Mark Jordan and Amy Skye, Miles Goodwin from the rock band April Wine, Andrew Hyatt, New Moon Junction, Justin Hogg, Colin McDonald from the rock band The Trues, Manny Blue, Carissa, Katie Topham, Lindsay L., Sass Jordan, Katie Hurt, Justin Collin, and so many more. You can check out all the podcasts with artists and interviews that you don't want to miss at musicsjourney.com. You can also check out all the articles that I write with all the artists that you know and love, with all the latest music, videos, and reviews at nowandthenmagazine.com. Well, that's it for me, your host, Kim Sear. Thank you so much for tuning in to Music's Journey, and have yourselves a wonderful evening. I will catch you here next time on Music's Journey.
Don't change the way you wake up when I'll make a beautiful sun coming through shade. Don't change the way your blue eyes look on mine, the way you wreck me every time you say my name. Don't change a single thing, don't change a thing for me. Nah, nah, cause I know every night turns into day, and a memory fades in a picture frame. Sunshine turns to rain, a lot of good love goes to waste. But the one for me is always gonna be you, like a July sky's always gonna be blue. And even when it ain't, I'll be loving you the same. That don't change. Mm-hmm. That don't change. It's in my hand, God's got a plan for me and you. Don't change the way you look in my t-shirt, the way you kiss so good it hurts, you know you do. Don't change a single thing, don't change a thing for me, nah, huh?
lot of good love goes to waste. But the one for me is always gonna be you. Like a July sky's always gonna be blue. And even when it ain't, I'll be loving you the same. And that don't change. Mm-hmm. That don't change. No.
Summer night feels just right. Kind of party get you talking all year. I got my boys and all the girls are here. I grabbed a drink, she made me think. About 52 cards full of truth or dare. Got my head spinning like a record player. Oh, 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 yo. We're good to go, we're good to go, we're good to go. When the world gets low, little one love on the radio. Don't mind the trouble, you know we're getting into. Dancing in the dark in the neon light. Everything's better with the Miller Lite and the whiskey burning strong. We can get along, we can get along, we can get along. Baby, like a house on fire. Whoa, oh, oh. Hanging from the chandelier. That's the kind of thing we do around here. Oh, 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 yo. We're good to go, we're good to go, we're good to go. We can get high when the world gets low. Little one love on the radio. Don't mind the trouble, you know we're getting into. Dancing in the dark in the neon light. Everything's better with the Miller Lite and the whiskey burning strong. Get along, we can get along, we can get along. Baby, like a house on fire. Whoa, oh, oh. Whoa, oh, oh. Whoa, oh, oh. Burning it down, burning it down. Hey, baby, we can run this town. Burning it down, burning it down. Tell the girl what you're doing right now. Burning it down, burning it down. Hey, baby, we can run this town. Burning it down, burning it. You know we're getting into. Dancing in the dark in the neon light. Everything's better with the Miller Lite and the whiskey burning strong. We can get along, we can get along, we can get along. Baby, like a house on fire. Whoa, oh, oh. Bad girl, but you're a whole lot of wild and a little bit of crazy.
up all night. The kind of girl who ain't quite right. When I need you most, you ain't around. But girl, I love the way you let me down, do it rough. Girl, I love the way you mess me up. Show up late, start a fight. Down. I love the way you let me down. You don't ever wanna meet my friends and just kick back and unwind for a minute. We don't talk before 10 p.m., but then my phone starts ringing. I make plans, you don't show up. I get alone, I can't get enough. I guess you kinda giving me a run around. Love the way you let me down, do it rough. Girl, I love the way you mess me up. Show up late, start a fight. And tell me you hate me, then stay the night. Cause anytime you want, girl, you can come get it. It ain't love, but I won't regret it. I try to leave, but I always come back around. I love the way you let me down. I get in my truck and come around, girl. Call me up when you want. I get in my truck and come around, girl. Call me up, I get in my truck and come around, girl. Call me up, cause girl, I love the way you let me down, do it rough. Girl, I love the way you mess me up. Show up late, start a fight. And tell me you hate me, it's late at night. Get in my truck and come around, girl. Call me up, cause girl, I love the way.